Namaste. Hola. Welcome to Pyramid Meditation Channel Global, an initiative of Pyramid Spiritual Society's movement. The core principles of Pyramid Spiritual Society's movement are meditation to expand our energy field, vegetarianism, and the practice of ahimsa to experience oneness in our physical reality, pyramid energy to amplify the elevated energy field around us, and spiritual science to hone and chisel the intellect for the advancement of the humankind. All of which can be easily integrated in our everyday life, such as everyday practice of meditation, reading of the right spiritual books, listening to the experiences of our spiritual friends and masters, and sharing the knowledge with one and all. Keeping in line with the principle of sharing this wisdom and reading the right spiritual books, in the coming days, you will have a unique opportunity to expand your intellect and evolve through the experiences that will come through to us from the gift that has been given to mankind in the form of a book. The book is named The Untold Story of Sita. And to enable us to go deeper into the depths of the story that is so essential for mankind to hear in these trying times is our very own dear Pyramid Master from Australia, Mrs. Saroja Gullapalli. She's been given the title Pramat Vidwan Mani in 2019 at Dhyanma Chakram. An engineer by profession, she's last served as a senior management professional executive in a multinational company named ExxonMobil. She began her spiritual journey a long time ago, precisely 15 years. And she's been doing a lot of community work since then, from the time she started under the umbrella Saroja's Self-Empowerment. She has several accolades to her credit, such as the Victorian Multicultural Award for the Excellence in 2011, and has been a keynote speaker at various international conferences, such as the one that was held in Chicago called the Integrating Spirituality and Holistic Living in Organizational Leadership. We're very grateful to her for choosing to share this wisdom with us to transform the way we understand the role of feminine energy in the evolution of mankind. Thank you so much, ma'am. Welcome to the show. We are so lucky and fortunate that you've chosen to share this beautiful wisdom that's so much needed in our times. Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste, Alekhya Master. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity on this PMC Global platform. I would like to extend a warm welcome to all the masters who have connected with me today on this PMC Global platform. I am Saroja Gullapalli, trying to connect my energies with you all on this evening from Melbourne, Australia. My deepest heartfelt gratitude to our Brahmashri Pitamaha Patri Sir, who has given me this opportunity to come with this wisdom of this untold story of Sita in three different languages, English, Hindi, and Telugu. We have started this journey 3 days back. This has been an amazing journey. We started in Hindi, we moved on to Telugu, and today we are trying to bring the same energies of Mata Sita and all the meditators around this world with the masters on the platform today. My deepest gratitude to the author, Dana Mariam, who has brought this masterpiece, a jewel, to all these meditators and non-meditators in this world, which is going to change the dynamics of this community in the current world. As we take you along in this beautiful journey of wisdom sharing of Mata, you will be amazed the things that we thought we knew and the depth as we keep going, the things that keep revealing in front of us. Before we take you on this wonderful journey, my dear masters, I would like to take this opportunity to just go deep within, where we can just start connecting with all our energies and try to bring the energy of Mata Sita, about whom this book is all about. So may I request you to kindly sit comfortably wherever you are. For the first 5 minutes, I would like to take you on the meditation journey. And after the 5 minutes meditation journey, we will go on to the wisdom sharing. So I would request you all to cross your feet, lock your fingers, place them on your lap, gently close your eyes, and travel with me along this Anapanasati meditation, which is noticing your breath. As you sit there with closed eyes, I would request you to be with your breath. Relax, my dear masters. Not open your eyes. For the next 5 minutes, let's be with our breath. As the beautiful music keeps playing in the background, let's try to reach within. Breath, my dear masters. The gentle, soft, natural, tranquil breath that we have always been with. Just be with your breath. Follow your breath as you inhale, the air that goes through your nostrils, and as you exhale, be with the breath that comes out of your nostrils. Just be with your breath, my dear master. On this beautiful time, from wherever you have joined, let's connect all our energies. And in our meditation, let's invoke Mata Sita to bring all her energies with us today. Be with your breath, my dear masters. No thoughts whatsoever. Follow our breath for the next 2 minutes. Let's connect ourselves with our energies. No thoughts whatsoever. Let's use this 5 minutes to reach deep within. Connect to that stillness that exists within our soul. Connect to that inner space that guides us all. Connect to that divine consciousness. That is the cause of all the manifestation. Just be with your breath, my dear masters. I would like you to gently rub your eyes, rub your palms together and place them on your closed eyes. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Gently remove your palms from your eyes and open your eyes softly when comfortable. That was wonderful couple of minutes that I really got the opportunity to share with your energies, my dear masters. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to connect with you today before we start our session. Over to you, Madam Alekhya.
Thank you so much, ma'am. So before we go into the details of the book, could you please share with us a high-level summary of what this book is all about?
Sure, Alekhya. This is a wonderful book. And as Alekhya mentioned, before we dive into the details of the book, it's a great idea just to have an overlook of what the executive summary or the high-level summary of this book is. Sita's story carries the memory of a world lush with divine forces that appeared in various forms through rivers, forests, winds, and solar rays in a yuga that was called Treta Yuga. Many ages ago in ancient India, Sri Ram came to establish the foundation for a society based on universal principles of righteous actions in harmony with the universal laws known as Dharma. And what is at the heart of this Dharma? My dear friends, the unconditional love. Love is what that keeps the universal laws in motion. Love is what that holds the magnetic and the gravitational fields together. It is the force of love that is the cause and mover of all manifestation, which eventually transforms back into that unmanifested ultimate reality. During every stage in human evolution, there have been realized beings who have manifested great love. As humanity evolved at the end of last descending Treta Yuga, when the spiritual vision of humanity was weakening, this love needed to be made more visible by establishing Dharma as the foundation of the human society. It was at this time that Sri Ram and Mata Sita appeared on earth for the purpose of manifesting a complete and perfectly balanced human love. It is this love that Sri Ram and Mata Sita displayed for each other. Not only for each other, for all the people of their kingdom, for the creatures of the forest, for all the forest life, for Mother Earth herself. Not only that, for even for the stars that dwell at such a distance. Together, they exemplified a complete and perfectly balanced human love. They demonstrated the possibility for humanity to realize on this earth that rarefied quality of higher divine love, which is not based on emotion, neither on self-interest, nor on desire or possessiveness, but only on one thing, which is the well-being of the whole. Only by awakening the true essence of Dharma that I spoke before, the love that is imprinted in our nature, my dear masters, will we be able to realize the higher possibilities that await our human life. This is the key summary of this book that we are going to start opening little by little as we go along.
Wow, I can't wait to get to know more details. So I understand that this book has clearly not been written by someone who is part of the Indian tradition and culture. Could you tell us a little bit more about the author?
Sure, Alekhya, that's true. This is written by Madam Dana Merriam, who lives in New York at the moment. So I think it's very appropriate before we start sharing the jewels of this book. I think it is time that we really know a bit about the author. She's a great master and a great human being too. Dana Merriam, she's the founder and convener of the Global Peace Initiative of Women, which is called as GPIW. Bringing spiritual resources to address critical global challenges around the world, global conflicts, social justice, and ecological scarring on the earth. Over the years, she has worked to bring the greater gender balance and balance between different religious traditions to have a more inclusive interfaith moment. Dana Merriam served as vice chairman of the Millennium World Peace Summit of Religious and Spiritual Leaders, which was held in New York in year 2000. She subsequently convened a meeting of women religious and spiritual leaders in Geneva. And that was the foundation for this Global Peace Initiative of Women, which she started in 2002. One of the key objectives of this GPIW is to explore how meditation and contemplative practices are reshaping the spiritual landscape of our current society. Just to know a little bit about the past of Dina Miriam, over the last 40 years, Dina Miriam has been a devotee of the school of Kriya Yoga of meditation that was established by Paramhamsa Yogananda. And she has been a student of great texts of Vedic tradition. Dina Miriam, she received her master's degree from Columbia University in sacred literature. She has served on various boards, and to name a few, Harvard Center for the Study of World Religions, All India Movement of Seva, which is called AIM for Seva. Not only that, one of the things that's very good to know, there's a country called Bhutan, where one of the key measurement index is the happiness measurement index. And she is on the board member on the Gross National Happiness Center in Bhutan. Not only that, in 2014, she received the Nivano Peace Prize for her interfaith peace efforts. Amazing efforts that she has done. For all her adult life, she has been a devotee of Sri Ram and Mata Sita. But it was not until she started writing this book that she started developing a personal relationship with these two divine figures. They became very real living guides for her. She found herself basking in their presence, seeing them behind closed eyes, listening and reflecting deeply on the words she was hearing and recording, talking to them and trying to understand with her intellect what was being revealed in her heart. Because we all know, my dear friends, the little mind that we use is quite little to understand that great intellect when it flows through us. And Dina Miriam faced exactly that. So what she has brought in front of us when she allowed that divine consciousness to freely flow through her, this is the result of what we get, the beautiful book, Untold Story of Sita.
This higher intelligence that you speak of is something that takes a lot for us to comprehend. And she's used words as a medium to communicate with us, this divine energy. What is she trying to convey to us through this book?
So Dina Miriam has got wonderful, wonderful, wonderful messages throughout this book. But just to go with a couple, because when we go through this book, we will be talking about quite detail about what this book is. And as I will be taking you to this wonderful journey, every revelation that we come across does really startle you at every point of time. But just to start with, if we can just go through some key points of what this main messages are. So when the earth or humanity, whenever it needs to take an evolutionary leap, it is said that the aspect of divine consciousness that preserves and advances the cosmos incarnates in physical form to aid with this process. In Sanatan Dharma, we have got these three phases as Srishti, Sthiti, and Laya. What I'm talking about the preservation and advancing of the cosmos, is that the center state, the middle state, which is called the Sthiti in Sanskrit. The tradition states, this is the tradition of the Sanatan Dharma that we have been getting from Vedas. The tradition states that Sri Ram and Mata Sita, they were incarnation of this aspect of divine consciousness and appeared on earth to guide the evolutionary transition and establish the roots of a new civilization that would see humanity and the earth community through its journey away from the galactic center of magnetism. In the Ramayana that we have read right from beginning when we were children, all we know is after a point, we start hearing the Ramayana where we come to know that Sita was kidnapped against her will by the demon King Ravana and was rescued by Rama, the hero. It is here that her purity was questioned, her reputation sullied, and she's forced to retreat to a forest hermitage where she bears her twin sons and raises them before she asks Mother Earth to open and receives her once again. This is how the ending of Ramayana happens. And I'm sure like me, you all must have felt towards the end, you get that sad feeling that for such a divine mother, what a kind of ending it is. For people like us, who always had that question mark in us, the untold story of Sita approaches Sita, not as an appendage or an appendix of Rama, but as his divine equal in every way. While Ram is an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, as we believe, Sita is an incarnation of Lord Vishnu's female counterpart, which is called Mahalakshmi. The exile, the kidnapping, the separation from Rama, her supposed trial by fire, and her time away from the kingdom at a hermitage, nothing happens without her consent and her knowledge of the underlying reasons behind each action. The deeper meaning, when you start knowing about all these things through this book, you really feel that the answers that you have been looking for, finally, there is a complete closure. This is such a wonderful message that comes out of this book. Not only this, Dana Madam has really come up with such strong messages, which started off in Treta Yuga, but they are so much applicable to even now, which we call the modern civilization. To just share with you a couple of those. To start with, the deeper meaning of marriage between Ayodhya and Mithila, as we go through the story, is basically for civilizations to advance. What we are seeing today, the foundation was laid in Treta Yuga. It was a marriage of the power and might of Ayodhya, which was uniting with the wisdom and knowledge of Mithila, where Janaka was the king, in order to establish a society based on dharma. Mata Sita's contribution cannot be overstated, as she had absorbed the knowledge of Mithila and could guide the development of Ayodhya. The seeds of democracy that we see now were sown in ancient Mithila, millennium before Greece was even conceived. In history, we all learn that the democracy was started in Greece. But what we try to understand now is those seeds were right in the time when Janak Raja was ruling Mithila. Janak understood the need to develop self-governance by and for the people. So he set up village councils at that time, which we call Treta Yuga, which is 5,000 to 7,000 years before our current time. It is these thought patterns that guide human evolution. One of the roles of great masters, as we all see, is to establish beneficial thought patterns that can be adopted by collective, leading to more evolved forms of life. During the Treta Yuga, when this story has been set, or when Ramayana we are talking about, during that stage of history, what was seen was the rational faculty was developing among the human beings as the intuitive faculty was declining. So my dear friends, it's a beautiful balance. As people were coming out of their inner realms, their interest towards the external realm was increasing. As humanity focused more on the external, the connection to the internal worlds were weakening, my dear masters. What took place so long ago in the lives of Sri Ram and Mata Sita, it must be understood according to the sensibilities of each era. The stories must be told not in the form of frozen time. We should not see this story as it was only applicable to Treta Yuga, which is 5,000 to 7,000 years behind, but in a living form that speaks to changing human conditions. We must understand not only the outer narrative, but what is important here is we need to understand the inner story and perceive what took place on the invisible planes that drove all the actions that happened in Ramayana and now Sitayana, as we call. Because this is the deeper teaching that we are going to understand through this book. Many versions of these historical narratives focus on the outer achievements of Sri Rama, but the true work of Sri Ram and Mata Sita was and continues to be guiding the evolution of human mind and heart as avatars of the divine consciousness. Their main responsibility is to preserve that which has been created by aiding the unfolding of outer as well as inner worlds, preventing the humankind from self-destruction. That is what we are capable of if not guided. The author also rescues the female rishis of the ancient age from obscurity and shows them as the equals of their husbands In other words, to take an example, sage Anusuya is not only a wife of great Rishi Atriya, she's herself a wise sage and was always called as the great Rishi Anusuya, which we not many of us know about. It is time that female empowerment extends up to the realm of the sages, not only sages, to all those invisible realm and the divine realms. And we acknowledge the spiritual attainments and contributions of women as equal to their male counterparts. So different messages really coming out of the book is mind-boggling. You would think that is the story of Rama and Sita alone. Yes, it is a beautiful story, which tells you from Sita's version as well, but the kind of things that really come open in front of us, you would really enjoy when we take you on this journey.
Very much looking forward. So it seems what might come across as a work of fiction is much deeper. I hear you say a lot of things that I've heard of previously, words which I now think are just at a surface level, something understood by the mind. There are two phrases in particular that I want to go deeper into. One is the galactic center of magnetism. Sounds very wooey. And something, a word that we now commonly throwing around, women empowerment. And I think this book is a much more than what we understand of it. So could you shed some light on that?
Sure, Alekhya. When I heard this word galactic center of magnetism, in fact, I myself went through this thought process that what was the significance of this particular word and what impact did it have on this book or the scene setting of this book or the time that Treta Yuga was passing through. And as I learned more about this, my desire to share with this viewers kept really increasing. And that's one of the reasons I would really love to share this particular terminology, what it means. So just to start with, I would like to start with the understanding we always have. So when we read history, you know, the time, you know, from the modern Western view of time that emerged from Europe and how we really watch our history developing over the centuries, we've always seen that it's all in a linear form. It's always been explained as a linear development of history, the physical evolution that propels life on Earth forward, you know, slowly getting complex and complex. So according to the kind of history that we are aware of, humankind emerged from caves around 11,000 BCE when the last ice age ended and the glaciers retreated. And we all know as a result of that, the oceans rose some 400 feet. And once the water started flowing, forests began to flourish and the oceans began to now produce abundant rains. And then over the next few millennia, humanity moved from the hunter-gathering society to agriculture one, and then gathered in settlements. This was all seen as an evolutionary advance. And we also see that during this time, the mental development moved towards greater individuation. So from society kind of consciousness, human beings started to go in more individuality. And with that came a separation from nature, which led to the belief that mankind was meant to control the natural world. The sense of the collective weakened as individual ego development became more prominent. Of course, it took many millenniums to unfold. So this is the kind of story, roughly, we talk about the time in a linear form. But what really we're going to learn today to understand the scene setting of this book, to understand that Treta Yuga, the 5,000 to 7,000 years ago scene setting, is the cyclic moment of time. So from linear time, now we are moving forward to cyclic moment of time. And this is what I would like to spend the next 5 to 10 minutes just to take my viewers along this journey so that we all share the same platform as we move along forward that will make us understand the story much better. So the ancient Eastern mind saw this nature of time a bit differently, as cyclic rather than linear. So as you know, in ancient India, time was viewed in terms of long cycles, which was called yuga. And that correlated to the movement of our solar system within our galaxy. So just to make you a little bit more clear, this particular cycle was divided into 4 discrete time periods. that made up a complete cycle of 24,000 years. So we are starting with a complete cycle of lifetime of 24,000 years. A 12,000 year time period when our solar system is moving away from the galactic center of magnetism. So my dear friends, just try to visualize that you have a circle which takes 24,000 years to complete. And we are starting from a point, and this is the point, if we start with, where our solar system is the closest point to the center of the galaxy. This is the magnetic center of the galaxy. So what is the magnetic center of the galaxy? This is the energy that keeps all this galaxy systems that go around it. So it's a kind of a attraction power, if you can understand the magnetic power of attraction. So when our solar system goes around doing its cycle, there comes a time when it is very close to the center of magnetic center of galaxy. And then it starts moving away. So if we take this point as the starting point, when our solar system is moving away, it takes 12,000 years for our solar system to go to the farthest point. So this is called the descending arc of the time. So that you understand this terminology, because we are descending, we are moving away from the center point of magnetism. And this is the point when we are farthest away from the galactic center of magnetism. And then as you would assume, it would take 12,000 years for our solar system to come back to the closest point from the galactic center of magnetism. So this whole system, if you understand this cycle, then everything else become very crystal clear. So for this 12,000 years on the top, when you were moving away from that center, that arc is called descending arc. And when the solar system is moving closer to that center, that is called the ascending arc. That means you're going closer. Now, both the arcs are just a replica. Now, this 12,000 year period time is divided into four yugas. So we start with Satya Yuga, followed by Treta Yuga, followed by Dwapar Yuga, and then you have your Kali Yuga. In time of the length of these yugas, of the 12,000 years, Satya Yuga remains for longer time, 4,800 years. Then it is followed by Treta Yuga, which is 3,600 years of time, which is again followed by Dwapar Yuga, which is 2,400 years of time, followed by Kali Yuga, which is 1,200 years of time. Now, my dear friends, from the farthest point, when our solar system is traveling back to that closest point, that descending arc that I mentioned, the lower part of the circle, again gets divided into four parts, the same yugas. One would think that after Kali Yuga, one would jump straight to Satya Yuga. No, my dear friends, Kali Yuga happens when our solar system is farthest from that center point. So after one Kali Yuga of the descending arc, when you enter the ascending arc, you are entering another Kali Yuga. So that was quite interesting for me, and my understanding was in that. So two Kali Yugas happen one after another. Again, in that ascending arc, after the Kali Yuga, you're followed by Dwapar Yuga of 2,400 years, and then a Treta Yuga of 3,600 years, and then you have your Satya Yuga, which is 4,800 years, and then you have reached again to the point where you started from. This is the cyclic movement of time, my dear friends. The reason I'm telling you in so much of great detail, because as we try to understand why things unfolded the way they unfolded at the time of Ramayana, it becomes so clear to us once we understand this time cycle. Because now I would like to go through this journey one yuga after another. I wanted to show this beautiful picture if I could. I'm not sure, last time when we were doing the Hindi session, I did request Alekhya to tell me if I was close enough.
Yeah, just a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's perfect.
Yeah. So, my dear friends, this is what we are looking at. So, in front of you, what you're seeing is that beautiful circle that I was talking about. And that is the point, that top point is the point where your solar system is the closest to galactic center of magnetism. So, that is the point you need to remember. And that half is your descending arc that I talked about. And this arc is your ascending arc. Very, very important to understand. So that descending arc, as I mentioned, starts with Satya Yuga of 4,800 years, followed by Treta Yuga of 3,600 years, and then followed by Dwapar Yuga of 2,400 years, and then that's followed by Kali Yuga of 1,200 years. Then this is the point which is farthest. Our solar system is at the farthest point from the galactic center of magnetism. Then as you move along into the second arc, which is your second half of the circle, now you again replicate a Kali Yuga of 1,200 years, then 2,400 years of Dwapar Yuga, followed by 3,600 years of Treta Yuga, and then you've got your 4,800 years of Satya Yuga. So that Ramayana that we are going to talk about is on that descending arc, the Treta Yuga on the descending arc, my dear friends. So very important to understand that. And where we are today, I'm going to talk about this, but because I'm going to take this picture away, just for your remembrance, where we are today. So just again, reference, the Ramayana that we are talking about is on the Treta Yuga of this descending arc. And as per this book, which I'm going to go through a bit more detail, we have already entered into the ascending arc. We have completed the first Kali Yuga that comes in the ascending arc, and we have just entered the Dwapar Yuga. According to this book, and I'm going to give you more details, according to this book, what has been mentioned is the Kali Yuga of ascending arc finished at 1700 AD. So from that time onwards, we have entered Dwapar Yuga. If you can't remember all these details, it's fine, my dear friends, but it really helps because it was quite intriguing for me. So I like to share as much detail as I can, because throughout this book, you will see the terminologies that are coming. And I don't want you to be thinking that, oh, we did not really refer about these terminologies. So bear with me as I go through these details. So now that I have clearly explained to you the yugas and the descending arc and the ascending arc, so let's touch at the descending arc where we start. The Satya Yuga. Satya means the truth. It is the longest of the time period in terms, which I mentioned, is 4,800 years. And as I mentioned, that is the time when our solar system is the closest to that galactic center compared to the other yugas. So now what happens if it is quite close to the magnetic center? We have to remember, my dear masters, that this magnetic energy, which is coming from the center, the magnetic center of the galaxy to our solar system, it impacts humanity. It allows us for the direct perception of our spiritual truth. That much effect it has directly. So we need to understand, we always have read that in Satya Yuga, people were like so close to their hearts, so close to their consciousness. This is one of the reasons, because of the proximity of the solar system to the galactic center of magnetism, the impact that it had on the humanity, it allowed for the direct perception of the spiritual truth. So the main attribute of Satya Yuga was heightened spiritual awareness. Not only that, the deities and the divine energies, you could see them everywhere. You could see them in animated in rivers, mountains, solar bodies. You could see your divine energy in any manifested part of the world. These days, if you go and stand in front of a river, there would be like point, not one person who can really feel the divine energy of that river. But I'm talking about Satya Yuga. If someone wanted to connect to a divine energy of any part of the nature, they would instantly do that. And that is the reason why I showed you this cycle, why that behavior changed. So this is one of the main reasons. There was a very thin etheric veil that separated the material and non-material worlds. So you could be in your physical body, but if you wanted to connect to the higher realms, it wasn't difficult for human beings. So that much impact, the proximity of the solar system to the center of magnetic center of galaxy really mattered a lot, the proximity. After that, the next time period, Treta Yuga. This is a descending moment away from the center of magnetism, the descending arc that I'm explaining. It is said that during the Treta Yuga, humankind could still perceive the nature of magnetism. So that inner knowledge was still there. People could still see their past, could talk about the future, but spiritual perceptions were not as clear as Satya Yuga, because you know the reason we are moving away. And the perception of the deities that animated the natural world, they began to fade slowly. So now you can understand that in the descending arc, now when we came to Dwapar Yuga, in which the perceptions decrease further, but humankind still able to perceive the nature of electric energies, not to the same extent, but they could feel the energies. They couldn't see though, but they could still feel it. During this era, humankind slowly started focusing on conquering the outer dimension of the space. Can you see how people are moving away from the inner world and slowly trying to awaken to the outer world? And slowly, you know, the dimension of outer dimension is really coming more into the being. During the last stage of the descending arc, which is the Kali Yuga, which is fortunately the shortest because it's only 1200 years compared to Satya Yuga, which was 4800 years, only the material world is perceived. People could not feel any of the finer energies, humanity in general, with the exception of a few advanced souls, not able to perceive anything beyond the physical universe. And who better than us can really relate to that? And then we enter the ascending part of the cycle. So we finished the descending part and now we're entering the ascending part. So we did another bit of Kali Yuga. So two Kali Yugas back to back. And as per what Dena Madam has shared, we have entered into the early stages of Dwapar Yuga. So the good news is, though we have moved away from Satya Yuga, we will again come back to Satya Yuga. So that's the good news, my dear friends. But it is far in the future yet. There will always be those who live in that consciousness, no matter which yuga you are in, no matter what the position of solar system is with respect to the center of the magnetism, galactic center of magnetism. And also, there will be people in every yuga who have not evolved to the levels of collective. So people choose. So where in the cycle are we now? As I explained, we have just entered that Dwapar Yuga of the ascending arc. So there are a lot of theories behind it. Some people do not agree because they still feel that, you know, they feel that they're surrounded by the Kali Yuga energies. For that, Dena Madam has said that because we have done two Kali Yugas, you know, still that cloud, our thinking is all totally clouded by two Kali Yuga thinking. So that is the reason that we are not able to feel that we have entered the Dwapar Yuga. And also because you need quite complex astronomical calculations to understand which part of the ascending arc you're in. Now, where did Dena Madam get her knowledge from? As we all know, she's from Kriya Yoga, Yogananda Paramhamsa School. And Yogananda's guru, Sri Yukteswar, as we all know, was a master of astronomy and mathematics, and it needs a lot of calculation to calculate time. So this knowledge, what Dena Madam is giving us, is the knowledge of Sri Yukteswar. My dear friends, when I was really going through this, this really captured my interest so much because I always like to see in with respect to this time, where we were at that time, because I completely believe that if we are here today, all of us might have definitely been in those yugas as well. So what a nice way of relating ourselves between those two time frames. So as we understand about these different yugas and the way people were behaving, as we said, Satya Yuga, when the spiritual perceptions were entering a time of decline, it was during the Satya Yugas that, you know, the Vedas, the great Vedas were seen by the rishis with their third eye knowledge. And there was really no need to write anything down because their power of mental communication and the power of memory was much greater than we have today. So absolutely, there was no noting down or, you know, storing that all that knowledge of Veda in written form. But as we started moving away from Satya Yuga, that requirement started coming up. So many people are feeling intuitive today that we are today in a transition period from one state of collective consciousness to other. We all feel it at this time. I mean, we just can't place our finger on the pulse and say why it is, but we all feel that we are all moving from a collective state of consciousness into another. Just to give that relation, when the Ramayana scene was setting, that was of great significance because that was also a great time of transition. Sometime during the last descending Treta Yuga and when the Dwapar Yuga was approaching. So that was also a great transition time as we are feeling today. The society also felt similar to that, but in a descending form. And that was the time of further knowledge, of further loss of spiritual knowledge and of direct communication with the natural world that people were losing. So hermitages, we call it ashrams, Hermitages, they were the first educational institutions, and they were established to preserve the knowledge that the great rishis had brought to the human communities during the Satya Yuga. Because as I mentioned, in Satya Yuga, it was not required to really start collectively storing that, because everyone had great intuitions, great communication, great memory. So the requirement that it had to be preserved only started in Satya Yuga. And that was one of the reasons that these hermitages, these ashrams had come into existence. And one of the key reasons was the main focus of these ashrams were to start documenting all this great wisdom that had come through, through the Satya Yuga. New forms of government and institutions for administrating justice had to be established at this time, that changing time from Satya Yuga to Dwapara Yuga. So you will see so many things that were initiated at that time. And the reason I'm kind of mentioning is because when you talk about the time frame that I just did and try to understand what was happening, then it kind of a link happens, and then you understand, oh, so this happened because of that time frame. And that's the reason, my dear friends, I'm taking you through this much of detail. And for the first time, at that time of transition, man saw that he could control the natural world. So slowly, by the end of Treta Yuga, people have started having this idea that, yes, maybe we can do something to control external, so the greed for power. And this influenced, you know, the ego development and sense of power. With this growing power emerged the desire for more acquisition, the greed for grandeur. And this led to the enhancement of the greed in human beings. Just to finish this cyclic moment of time, one of the important things that happened was gender relationships changed. The women rishis who had participated in the articulation of sacred knowledge, slowly, you know, these were the people who had helped to address the needs of mankind, causing rivers to flow where there were no rivers, seeding forest foods, keeping negative forces at bay. All these women rishis who were reason for the plenitude of life, slowly we see that they were kind of going into the background. Slowly they were vanishing as the yuga was turning from the Treta Yuga to Dwapara Yuga. New norms had to be set and new dharmas were coming up because there was very much a necessity of a new society. So what we need to remember, my dear friends, when I talk about this complete time cycle, is the focus was shifting from the inner realms to the development of the material and the physical world. So I have this passion, I have this thirst to share everything that I come across, I learn. So you can see that, you know, when I'm telling you this time cycle, how I could really place the Treta Yuga thoughts and the current thoughts and match it with where we are in the cycle of the time. So that's what I wanted to share, Alekhya, as we were going through this terminologies of, you know, how the solar system was in proximity to the galactic center of magnetism.
It actually gives so much perspective to what we're actually been witnessing in the world today. The movements where women are coming out and speaking up and talking about their rights, and nature kind of taking over and taking charge. It puts so much perspective, all the knowledge that you've given us towards what's happening around and what it really means for us today. Come back to the book though. It seems that while it sets the context for so many things that we're witnessing, who's telling us this story really? Because when we see it from the point of Ramayana, it was actually written by a sage from his perspective as a story itself. So from whose perspective are we listening to this new story now?
Wonderful question, Alekhya. As we just start focusing on the scene setting of this whole narrative, my dear friends, the next 5 minutes that I'm going to talk is going to really go into your deep inner stillness. I would like you to close your eyes and connect to the energy as I go back to the times through our great author, Dina Mariam, who kind of sets this scene, what has been the scene setting for this book. So, in 2015, when the author, Dina Mariam, she has a conference of her GPIW. She's planning to come to Rishikesh to visit Mother Ganga. For Madam Dina, it had become her annual ritual that every year she would love to come to Rishikesh and sit by Mother Ganges. And she had developed a special kind of connection with Mother Ganges, which many of us do. It is such a lovely place, the Rishikesh, and the energies are so high sitting next to the Ganges. Now, when she was planning this pilgrimage to Rishikesh, she thought, on the way, I would like to take a stop in Ayodhya city. Because as I said before, she has a special inclination, a special connection to Sri Ram and Mata Sita. And Ayodhya being the birthplace of Sri Rama, Dena Madam wanted to take a stop at Ayodhya on her way to Rishikesh. So in 2015, she had the opportunity, and with the group of friends that she was traveling, as they got down in the station of Ayodhya, people who have been to Ayodhya, it's all walking distance if you want to visit the various temples. So as they were walking along the streets of Ayodhya, the moment they came into the Ayodhya city, for Madam Dena, everything changed. When I say changed, in terms of her whole perspective, she could see her, you know, she didn't feel as if she was in the current moment. She was not in this particular yuga. She felt that she could feel the energies of the Treta Yuga because she's so connected. See, that is what the connectiveness does. So as she was walking on those on the path, she was feeling, oh my God, this must be the path where Sri Ram must have walked. She would touch a tree and she would think, oh my God, this would be the tree which Sita Ma would have touched. So she was living, literally living what she had learned from Ramayana. So she was very eager to go to the birthplace of Sri Rama. So when they went to the birthplace, as we all know, it is a land which is in conflict or dispute at the moment. So there is no temple which was built once upon a time at the place where Rama was born. There was a mosque that was later built. Even that's not there at the moment. So it's just a barren land with a fence around. And when Dena Madam stood in front of it, a kind of sadness, you know, rose in her. She was really expecting, you know, this is the birthplace of Sri Rama. I would really like to connect here. So she wanted to really pay her homage and, you know, put her head down on the ground like we Indians do. But the security was so tight that they wouldn't allow her to do. So she was chased away from that place. And she felt, oh my God, I came all the way to really connect with Mata Sita and Sri Ram's energy and going back to those days. But I really haven't got that. So then she hired a boat, and there's a river called Sarayu. And as we go through the story, you will see it's a part of our story. So she said, okay, I would like to take a boat ride. And as she's going in the boat, suddenly for her, things have changed. That connectedness she has been waiting for throughout when she was in Ayodhya, she got that connectedness. She could feel the energies of Rama and Ma Sita just flowing through her. So she explains that Sarayu River boat ride as one of the start of her connection when she was in Ayodhya. So, but their trip did not allow them to stay there for long. They came back to Rishikesh. But all along, when she was sitting next to River Ganges, her mind was in Ayodhya. Her mind was in the Sarayu River boat ride. So she came back, and then she said she had another trip planned in 2016. So she came back in 2016, and this was more for mediation of peace talks in Jammu Kashmir area. So as she was traveling along Ladakh, Kashmir and Jammu areas, and when she was in Jammu town, the tourist that was accompanying the group took them to various temples. And as you know, Kashmir is a place of a lot of Shiva temples. It started with Shivites, so it's very much famous for great Shiva temples. But then the tour guide took them to a Raghunath temple, Raghunath, which is Rama. And Dena Madam was very surprised. In Kashmir, such a magnificent Raghunath temple, which she never even dreamt of. So Dena Madam explains that she thinks that the Raghunath temple in Kashmir, in Jammu, is one of the biggest and magnificent Rama temple in India. So honestly, my dear viewers, this curiosity has come in me too. I haven't visited the Raghunath temple, though I have been to Jammu before. So let's keep that on our bucket list. When we go next time to Jammu, let's not miss the Raghunath temple, because that's where the story started. So it's beautiful, apparently. And as Dena Ma entered the temple, she was mesmerized by its beauty, the way the architecture was. And when she went to the Sanctum Sanctorum, which is the main part of the temple. And she stood in front of Sri Rama and Sitama and Hanumanji, the main, the idols. Without her knowledge, her head was going down in a gesture that she wanted to bow down in front of her favorite Mata Sita and Sri Ram. And the moment her head touches the ground, she says that she goes through a time tunnel for some time. She doesn't know how long she's been traveling through the time tunnel. And the next second that she realizes, she sees herself as a five-year-old girl holding or just hiding behind her mother's sari. And she's at a door of a room, and she's trying to peep who is there in the room from behind her mother's sari. And that intuition, she knows that the person who is sitting there in that room is her father. And she tries to see who is her father talking to. And there she sees Sri Ram. Her father is talking to Sri Ram. So then she realizes, oh my God, I'm in Treta Yuga. So before she even realizes that she is in Treta Yuga, she's looking around and she sees that Sri Rama sees her hiding behind her mother's sari and calls her to come forward. So she's a very little girl, maybe 3 or 4 year old or maybe 5 year old. And when she comes closer, Sri Rama takes, this is all the vision she has seen in the temple, my dear friends. I go into a trance whenever I think about this scene, and Denama really takes us all, connects with her energy to us. So enjoy this vision as I explain, as I understand this vision from Denama. So Sri Ram calls the little girl, that is Denama, who is seeing herself, and asks her, come to me, Anasuya. So then she realizes, oh, my name is Anasuya. So when she goes close to Sri Rama holds her face in his hands very kindly and explains her father. She was one of the servants who came with Sita from Mithila in her last life. She loved Sita very much, but she did not live to see our return from the forest. I'm glad she has come into a good birth now. So she says, oh, so this is my next birth. And in my previous birth, I was a friend of Sita, or maybe a servant of Sita. That's what Sri Ram is saying. So I came from Mithila. And then Sri Ram is still holding her face and turns to her father and says, make sure she has a good education. There is now a Gurukula for girls. So my dear friends, this is what I want to know you to note, that this is the time the female education started for the first time in this cycle. So Sri Ram is explaining her father, now we have an institution, education institution for girls. Send her there. Sita would love that. So he's telling what Sita would love. Sita would love Anasuya to go to that education center. Saying that, Sri Ram places his hand on Anasuya's head and said very gently, I will give you a blessing. He says, I will give you a blessing. How beautiful blessing, my dear masters. I can just go into transit sitting here telling you this story. He closed his eyes, muttered some words, and then said to Anasuya, there will always be someone in every life to bring you back, to point you in the direction of your true home. How lucky Anasuya has. Even today, when Dena Madam is in this life, she got a pointer. She got a pointer that was the direction for her true home. And those were the words of Sri Rama. With those words, he rose. And then Anasuya's father saw him to the door. And Dena Madam says that was her memory of Sri Ram. So the memories or narrative of the Sita story actually then unfolded over a period of 7 months after she returned to New York. So my dear friend, she had this wonderful vision when she was in the Raghunath temple. And then after she went back to New York, then over the 7 months, you know, everything unfolded. So, although the Ramayana has been a foundational story for our Dena Madam, she has always felt this love. She has this impersonal love for Sita and for Mithila. And as we go through this book, you see her connection with Janak Baba and everything so beautifully done. So the whole story has really come as message to her. You know, most importantly, the teaching for her, the whole purpose of this memory call, recall, was that these beings, Rama and Sita, they can still be accessed today. So when she was going through that 7 months, when she went back to New York, her experience of recalling the life of the servant Meenakshi. So in that previous life before Anasuya, as we come to know, she was called Meenakshi. So the story that we hear in this book is through Meenakshi, as she experiences Janak Baba and Mata Sita as living beings in a very intimate way. They became part of her world, part of her consciousness. They were no longer mythological or historical figures for her, but real life incarnations of divine beings who still working with her for the well-being of universe. So for her, though Sita Maya and Ram, they are not there at the moment, but she truly believes that her connection to the Divine Mother took that form of personal relationship. So recalling this narrative also gave her the tiniest peek into the life during last Treta Yuga, something she had always been longing to seek. She had seen her past lives. Madam Dena has seen her past lives, but they were only in the near past. And this time she went into her past life, which was 5,000 to 7,000 years. So what we are going to see, my dear masters, is through the eyes of Meenakshi, through the vision that Dena Madam saw in the 7 months that unfolded in front of her, where she got connected to Mata Sita, which took her to her life in Mithila as Meenakshi. So that's the scene setting of this whole book, Alekhya. And as I speak, Mata Sita's energies are really flowing through with me, and I can really feel the vibrations. I hope through this story that I'm telling, I can pass all these energies to the viewers that are here on this platform today.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I almost felt that I got transported and I could see what she must have seen and felt and continue to feel what she has helped us to connect with. Thank you so much. We have the background set of the circumstances of the book. Can you give us a glimpse into the book now?
Definitely, Alekhya. This book has been set very wonderfully. As I said, as I was reading this book, the way it was, though Dena Madam was seeing her life through Meenakshi, I was seeing her life through her eyes, and it's been set so beautifully. So this whole book, just to give you a glimpse of how the whole book has been laid out in contents, it's in two parts. So one is the first part, which I call part one, is basically about her story. This is Meenakshi's story. Meenakshi's story is all about, you know, her life in Mithila. And what is Mithila? Mithila is the place where our dear Sita Ma has taken birth. Because of this wonderful setting, as we all know in Ramayana that we have always known about Alekhya, we've always seen Ramayana from Ayodhya. Ramayana starts in Ayodhya, where, you know, Dasharatha Maharaja wants boys, and he's doing yajna and all that. And when Sita comes at a very later date, you know, just before the Swayamvara. But here what we see is we are seeing this whole Sitayan, or the untold story of Sita, from Sita's perspective. So such a beautiful way, because Mithila is the hometown of Meenakshi, which is no one but Madam Dena. So we are going to see the part one through the eyes of Meenakshi, where we're going to cover Mithila as the kingdom was, what a personality was Janaka, the ruler. In what conditions was Sita born? What was Sita's nature? Do we really know who Sita was? What was her education regarding? And then how did she help the kingdom? How did she help Janaka to help grow her kingdom? And how much importance Mithila gave to the inner knowledge? And not only that, we are going to see the Swayamvara, which is the wedding of Sita. And that's when Rama comes. So that's the part one. So the part one ends when Sita comes to Ayodhya, to the point that Sita goes for exile for 14 years. And that's when Meenakshi finishes her incarnation. So the part one is the finishing of incarnation of Meenakshi. But the part two is Very beautiful. It is the second, it's the next incarnation of Meenakshi, which is Anasuya. That vision that we saw in Raghuna, the temple, was the next incarnation of Meenakshi, which is Anasuya, where she was hiding behind her mother's sari. So the part two is totally how Anasuya learns about what happened to Sita from the time where she finishes her incarnation as Meenakshi in part one. What a beautiful way to continue the story in part two. So when you start reading part one, you feel so disheartened. Oh my God, Meenakshi has died. Who's going to tell us this true story of Mata? But then when you come back to part two, you are so excited because now Meenakshi has come back to us as Anasuya, as a little girl. And how much little girls are enthusiastic. I don't know how little girls are enthusiastic, but at my age, I can be so enthusiastic. I'm sure you all can feel Anasuya's energy. And it's so beautiful, Anasuya, the way she takes us in the second part, telling us from where she had left it, you know, Sita in the exile. And then we come to know about Ravana. And that story that we have known, we are going to go the background reasons behind everything that we have known. So really, it is going, we know the facts, but here we're going to know the reasons behind. And these are not the reasons of the physical world. These are the reason of the inner realms. So that's the kind of the story that we are going to see during the scene setting. I'm very excited. So I think, Alekhya, this is a very good point that we take a break in our wisdom sharing today. I'm going to hand it over to you. And come next time, we're going to take this forward, going along with this journey of part one. And we're going to reconnect with every energy that we have on this platform. So over to you, Alekhya.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I think it's very important for people to understand because I myself have not read the Ramayana. It's an ancient scripture which tells the epic story for the basis of Hinduism, written by the sage Valmiki. It is more than 24,000 verses, and it all actually begins from our, in that story, the protagonist is actually Rama, and you know, his lament, that's basically where the entire story starts. And for us to get a perspective of the princess, who is really the center stage of the story, something that we're all geared up and excited for. Thank you so much, ma'am, and for bringing us onto this journey and setting us onto the context and giving us so much to reflect on. Because like you said, time is cyclical and all of us are going through this experience. And the time has come now in the present trying times for all of us to kind of use that as a cue to go deeper within ourselves. And you taught us meditation as well today. So we come back again to all the viewers of PMC Global. We'll be back again on Sunday at the same time for you to tune in to listen,
Alekhya,
to the next part.
Excuse me. I don't think, are we on the same time, Alekhya? I think.
So we're 5 p.m. in India, Indian Standard Time. I will have to quickly check.
I think it is 6 p.m. We go 1 hour later for English session. I think it'll be a good thing for us to check and let them know.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So it's one hour later.
Yes. Sorry. I think I missed that one. So for PMC Global audiences, come back to us on Sunday at 6 p.m. Indian Standard Time for us to take this story further. Until then, keep watching PMC Global. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, viewers.